We're good to go. I've got sound. We've got lots of wonderful sound in this room, networking and visiting with each other. But if I could ask for those conversations to be put on hold, we're going to have some time for that today. And I would like to call this meeting to order of the Health Benefit Exchange Board. We do have a report that there was some traffic tie-up, so Susan Kennedy called, and that may be delaying Paul Fuhrer as well. And so we do have a quorum, and we're going to begin. I would call the roll. Kim Belshe, Dr. Ross.
Here.
Paul Fuhrer and Susan Kennedy will be arriving. I'm Diana Dooley, the chair, and I am here. We have a challenging agenda, but the challenging agenda comes from the challenging times. As we have recognized for the more than a year now that we have been meeting, that it's necessary to move on concurrent paths. This ambitious timeline requires that we include some contingencies and some opportunities to gather information and ask for your participation in that, as we have in our commitment to robust stakeholder engagement. And because we are all in this together, and all of us have to contribute what we know to the issues that we're addressing. So the challenge today is that we want to have an opportunity to discuss with you and take public comment on the opportunity that was announced at the last meeting to consider the federal partnership as we continue to consider the contracting for an appropriate eligibility and enrollment system. So we will have public comment around that this morning. We will then break into closed session, where we will continue to consider contracting matters, and then we will come back in an open session in the afternoon. I know that is difficult and awkward for those of you who travel particularly, but to maximize our opportunity to get your comment and to consider the contracting matters that we must consider in closed session, we've had to do that. Another related issue that we experience and we will continue to experience is asking for public comment from the staff. We send out notices, the staff does, from time to time, asking for you to respond to things, and those requests for response don't always line up exactly with our meetings and our requirement for a 10-day notice. So there may be times when we have asked for your information and it overlaps with a meeting that you want to talk about, you are certainly free to raise issues in public, but if it hasn't been properly noticed on our agenda, we can't respond or discuss it or take action on it. So we have a meeting this week and a meeting next week, and then we have two back-to-back meetings in June, and the meetings are shorter than the 10-day period, so there may be some leapfrogging of issues that you raise with us that then you'll see on a noticed meeting, but it may not be the next meeting because it may have already been past 10 days. So I don't want to belabor that, but I just want to be clear that we are moving as quickly as we can. You are all so very helpful to that, and you've all been very responsive to our requests, but that is going to get more complicated, not less so, as we barrel forward to be ready in 2013 to do the kind of expansion that we all want in coverage for Californians. So with that, and I noticed that Paul Fuhrer has arrived, so let the record reflect that he is here and present. And I would ask then at this time if any of the board members have any conflicts that they need to disclose under our conflict rules. Seeing none, we will go then. Let me get back to my script. I reviewed the agenda for the day. I talked about the issues with the noticing and public comment and what you can do and what we can do. And I also want to say how very pleased we are, and Peter will give a fuller, better introduction in a few minutes, but we're very happy to have Amanda Cowley with us today, who is the acting director of the State Exchanges Group within the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight. That's CSIO, one of our federal partner areas. It's within the Department of Health and Human Services, but there are many sectors there that we deal with, and we're very happy to have Amanda with us today. So with that and the description of our split session, I will turn it over to Peter for his executive director report this morning.
Great. Thank you very much, Diana, and good morning, and thank everyone again for bearing with us as we barrel along this path to get an exchange up in California in 2013. What I'd like to do first is to give a review of our planning process and what's coming down the track. Diana noted that we have what have almost become weekly board meetings, and it's not going to be our regular practice to meet every week. Staff think that would be a bit much, as do the board members, and I, again, appreciate very much the board's willingness to schedule these meetings, but we are moving ahead on many fronts, and I wanted to lay out what's coming ahead over the next 2 months. And first, I really do want to note appreciation to really great staff work. It's a small staff, growing rapidly, but is doing really, to use a term that I get teased about some, phenomenal work. But it's also very good work with the consultants we've contracted with that have been working for us and with us, but also for us and with us in partnership with, in particular, Department of Healthcare Services, Managed Risk Medical Insurance Board, Office of Systems Integration, Department of Social Services, and last but not least, the range of advocates, interested stakeholders representing consumers, clinicians, plans, brokers that we've been meeting with over the last weeks and months. In our board material that the board got today are some of the products of some of your work that the board gets and is still doing background work on, but it ranges from work that Health Access did recently on assessing consumer assistance programs around the state to work done by Families USA looking at the availability of tax credits, to work recently done by Georgetown looking at plan management issues. And all of this material is posted on our website, but it's the board is able to be well informed, not just by the work that we do, but also by the work that we're informed by partners doing, and that's been very important and helpful. So the next three board meetings will be jam-packed, as Diana noted. Before our next board meeting, we have tomorrow morning a webinar that's going to be a high-level overview of Outreach, Marketing, and Navigators Program. This is going to be jointly sponsored by Department of Healthcare Services and the Managed Risk Medical Insurance Board, and it's going to preview what's going to be coming at next week's board meeting on the 22nd. And we encourage people that care to participate in that to get a heads up on what's coming on the 22nd. On the 22nd, coming to the board for discussion will be drafts, sometimes with potentially recommended options and other times with just options. That's the product of staff working with consultants in a number of areas, in particular, outreach and marketing, navigators and assisters, the Small Employer Health Options Program, the path forward on developing a service center, and an overview of the Level 2 grant. And in developing these materials, at the last board meeting, we talked about our iterative process that we seek to do. You'll see a new sort of standard format of three documents that are labeled either a board background brief, which is background, which doesn't necessarily say a path forward, a board options brief, which is here's some options, and third, a board recommendations brief. Now, we internally call these bobs and burbs, but we are just a B organization in honor of Bob Ross, but it is recognizing that we need cycling through with you to think through some really tough issues. The thing that I'd note for coming up for next week's meeting, we will be posting, we hope, on Friday, what's going to be a lot of material. But these are draft. The May 22nd meeting is not a decision forum. It's to share these with the board. The board to start getting to them. Stakeholders start getting to them. And we will welcome comments on the 22nd, but welcome comments also at the next board meeting. And in particular, welcome written comments to inform the board, staff, consultants as we refine recommendations that will come back to the board. And we will actually be asking for people to submit written comments on what we on this set of material by Thursday, May 31st. And we'll let people know this again. But I know a lot of people plan their calendars around us. We know we ruined people's Christmases before. So we wanted to let you know ahead of time our timelines. That was last time. That was last time. No,
that's ruin Christmas again.
No, we aren't going to ruin Christmas again. So exactly. So with that, we then will be having board meeting on June 12th and another one on June 19th. These are working towards the potential of doing a level two funding request that would be due the end of June. We're looking at that timeline. There's going to be new announcements on how those structures look like coming from CISIO shortly, and whether or not we do it as all as a big level two or stage, we aren't sure, but we're planning right now for that potential. We may adjust our timeline and stay tuned. Okay. With that, I'd like to move to the main agenda of the day, which is a discussion and, again, in particular, a presentation from Amanda on where CSIO and the federal government is in getting ready for exchanges across the country, but to have the state of California look at what might a federal partnership option look like on our path to being a state-based exchange. And as I noted at our last board meeting, California has both had visits from Washington, and we've gone to Washington and met with the teams there to give them updates on our status. And one of the things we've been struck by is that it has been such a good partnership between us and the federal government. And as we move ahead to be ready to launch in 2013, we believed it was important to understand exactly both where the federal government is in its planning process and what the nature of federal partnership options were, what they entailed, what they offer, and the status of federal efforts as we go forward in looking at, as Diana noted, both contracting and planning options. In the last 3 weeks, what the exchange staff have been doing, and have been doing very much in concert with Department of Healthcare Services, with the California Technology Agency, with Mr. MIB, DSS, Department of Finance, and others, is looking at the federal options and looking at the status of federal preparedness, so to speak, in terms of running websites, in terms of having the IT systems up. And we've been doing a review of what those look like and how those compare to, potentially, our contracting options. We're looking at this in the context of contracts that we're in the process of. And more importantly, we're looking at this to make sure that we're ready to serve Californians effective October 1, if not before, 2013. And with that, I'd actually just like to call and ask Amanda Calley, who's the again, the person that is running the state exchanges, in partnership, of course, for CSIO, to introduce to the board and to California where the state fits in the broader piece of where the federal government is in getting exchanges ready across the country. Amanda?
Thank you, Peter. It's a great pleasure to be here and speak with you all today about this. I think we are always planning our states, promising our states more guidance very soon. I will deliver some guidance today, and then there's really more guidance coming very, very soon. So you've heard it here again. But first, thank you to Peter Lee. It has been very exciting to have you on board as the executive director in California, and your growing team is has proved great colleagues for and great partners to all of us back in D.C. And I've not had a chance to speak with the board before, so it's a great pleasure. And thank you, Board Chair Dooley, and board members Fearer and Ross and Belcher for having us here today. As Peter said, y'all have been terrific partners to us for a very long time. When I started at CSIO, when it was OSIO 2 years ago, was when we began making our first trips out here. And the federal government, I think, has been learning from California and California's perspectives on this issue since the beginning. That partnership, I think, has intensified quite a bit over the last 6 months as California has really ramped up its operational build of its exchange. In March, we had a terrific intensive session for 2 days with your team, what we're calling our planning establishment reviews, where we walked through California's full initial vision for its exchange. And I think that provided us some really robust feedback in terms of where you're headed and allowed our experts and subject matter experts to interact with yours. And so we look forward to future interactions like that, and we think they're a great, great help to us. I also did want to just cite at the beginning of these remarks the tremendous progress that we think that California has made. We've been very pleased, obviously, out of the gate with the legislation you passed, the hires you've made of key staff, and even just this week with a chief technology officer, chief financial officer coming on board, and then the way you've been lining up pieces around the incredibly complex technology build and the build out of an exchange for somewhere like California with the release of your platform contractor, integrator contractor, IV&V, plan management, consumer. It's very impressive how busy you've been and how much a small team has accomplished. And so we're really excited about that. And frankly, we're excited about it because that's what's going to be required given the timelines that we're all staring down. And I also did want to just take a moment and thank the team and highlight the leadership that's been shown in two areas in particular. One, it's been quite notable what California has done around stakeholder engagement in terms of early and consistent outreach. That was clearly something envisioned by the statute as being key for these state-based exchanges, and it's been great to see California stepping up to that. The other place we see it repeatedly, and I think we're seeing it in the discussion here today, is the evidence-based approach to policy. It is not easy, given these timelines, to always step back and gather a great deal of data and ask the hard questions really thoughtfully. And I found it very inspiring, and I think my team found it very exciting to see California going through that thought process, and we're really excited to participate in that with you. So what I'm really here for today, I think, is to tell you all the secrets about the federally facilitated exchange and the partnership model. Again, I can't tell you all of them today, but very, very soon you will have them all. I'll tell you half of them today. On the federally facilitated exchange, we have our major contracts in place. The build is occurring. Just like you, it is a very tight timeline, but we're quite committed to getting it done. And what I have learned, if anything, in my 2 years at CMS is it is an unstoppable organization. And so this federally facilitated exchange will be standing and operating in 2014 to serve in every single state that requires it, and no matter what the number of states that do require that assistance. I think more exciting, though, frankly, than the federally facilitated exchange in the state is the partnership model. For states that maybe aren't ever going to be ready or interested in a state-based exchange for whatever reason of size or policy, or a state that is building towards a state-based exchange but can't finish all the technology solution, all the operational build quite in time. That's really what the partnership model was envisioned for. I am increasingly having conversations with states about a sort of transitional partnership model, which is if I'm not a state-based exchange, not quite ready to be a state-based exchange in 2014, can I work with you so that I have something in place that is the best of me and the best of you in 2014, and then all state-based exchange in 2015 or 2016. And we think it's an exciting option, and we're glad to have it available to states. Again, there is guidance coming very shortly that will have a lot of the details around this, but let me outline broadly what we know and what we can share about these models right now. The partnership models come in two flavors. One is around plan management. One's around consumer assistance. You can actually do both, which I think officially makes it three flavors. The plan management one we think is very important because it allows a state to continue to own from soup to nuts the relationships with the issuers, the selection of plans for the exchange, and the decisions about which plans will be available for their citizens on that exchange. The consumer assistance partnership is still being developed to make sure it's as full as possible, but it includes navigators and a variety of sort of in-person assistance that we think organically should live at the state level and would fit better for states to do themselves. The vision is that states interested in these partnership models can come forward at any time to have a conversation with, at any time this year, to have a conversation with us about what model might work best for them. We think the earlier we start planning for these things together, the better. But we do recognize that there are going to be some states that will be working towards a state-based exchange in very good faith and great activity and not realize until early 2013, for example, that their eligibility system might not be prepared in time. And we've developed a pretty detailed operational contingency timeline to allow states to shift into partnership at certain moments if that proves appropriate for them. It's probably worth maybe saying a few comments today as well about the approval of a state-based exchange and how that process is likely to work. The application, as many of you are probably aware, is due at the end of this year, and approval occurs on January 1st, 2013. Under the statute, we can provide both approval and conditional approval. Conditional approval will be for states who aren't quite ready to turn the lights on yet, but can show progress and expected progress towards full exchange operations by late 2013. And we're excited, again, I think this gives us more flexibility as we work with states as they determine if a state-based exchange model works for them or if a partnership model might be right in their very first year. So with that, I might not say any more and just say that I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Are there questions from members of the board? Dr. Ross, Paul, and then Kim. It looks like you all want to say something.
Yeah, thank you, Amanda. You appear to be more remarkably composed and relaxed than I feel today. So with that in mind, can you say a little bit more about your level of confidence and comfort about the technology portion of this thing for the feds and,
yes.
On a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being absolutely rock solid certain and 0 being completely panicked, how ready are you feeling for the federal information technology support system?
So I believe my official talking point at this time is 0, totally rock solid certain. I will say,
I mean,
I think
10.
It's 10. Oh, no.
10.
You just lost me.
10. Please change that. I will say we do feel pretty confident that we got the right contracts in place at the right time to make sure that basic operations are ready for 2013-2014. I think like any technology project, we all imagine that the capacity of the system will increase over time, and the sort of flexibility and sort of nuance of it will expand from 2013 to 2014 into 2015, right? We're building version 1.0, but we do feel a high degree of confidence that the data hub will be in place and that the systems will be there to support states. It does mean as we think about the partnership model that we can't build a partnership model around every different state's needs, right? It has to be a standardized product that we offer to states because in year one, version 1.0, we can't be making 50 different flavors. So it does mean while we've tried to come up with partnership options that are flexible and give states real choice, that it's not 1,000 different widgets, 12 different ways, because there wouldn't be no way to land the plane if we
were
doing that.
But we're so special.
I know.
In California.
I know. Trust me, I hear that all the time. Which is why I would actually say what has been very exciting about your leadership on this issue is it means that instead of us defining what a partnership model could look like and then you guys considering it and telling us what in your own special way you wanted, we've been able to have conversations about, in a hypothetical world, what kind of partnership model would be great for California while we have been developing and finalizing what the partnership model might look like internally. So it's been nice to sort of proceed in a dialogue with you in parallel around that, because maybe it means we'll be able to meet your very special needs.
She's good.
She is good. Paul.
Is that on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have really two questions. The first relates to the model itself, and you described a couple of different scenarios, if I understood it. Besides that it may take different forms, I'm thinking more about timing. So you described it on the one hand as a transition model, that is, states on a way to putting its model in place, but it's not quite ready. So this is kind of a way station model. But what I wasn't clear, you also suggesting for some states it might be the permanent model? That's one question I was trying to understand. The other is around decision points. You also indicated that there may be multiple decision points around this issue. In other words, a state could decide in the present to go into some sort of partnership. But I think, if I understood you right, there are also later entry points for a state, for example, that may be doing its best to establish the exchange, but say on technology or whatever issue hits some stumbling blocks. So is that the case? So first I'm trying to understand, what is the model? Is it really just transition, or for some states is it longer term? And also the entry points, the times.
Yeah. So there are some states where the size of their individual insurance market does not make, or when they've done the math on the kind of exchange they'd want to build, does not make a long-term, independently financially sustainable model based on user fees viable. And so some of those states have had conversations about maybe they want to actually be in a partnership model long-term, where they would, again, be able to maintain control of the plan management and the issuer activities in the exchange space, but wouldn't have to shoulder the cost of maintaining the technology platform with user fees based on a population of, you know, 20,000 or 30,000 or 50,000 people, which depending on, again, a funding model that a state's considering wouldn't be sufficient. So those are states that are considering sort of a long-term partnership model. I think the world is evolving around us. So what a state goes into now thinking might be a long-term partnership model, long-term might last till 2018. But I know that some states aren't viewing it as a, I'll do this on my way to state-based exchange, but rather I'm going to do this instead of a federally facilitated exchange because it's a better fit for the citizens of my state. The second question about entry points. We've looked really closely at sort of when systems and major processes have to come online for the different aspects of an exchange. For example, plan management takes place pretty early. Many of those major activities and the issuer outreach really starts to happen late 2012, early 2013. And in the federally facilitated exchange, we think that a lot of the real engagement with issuers has to begin in terms of them submitting applications and things like that around early 2013, at which point we need to, an issuer needs to know, right? Are they applying to a state-based exchange, or are they going to apply to and applying to the state, or are they applying to the federally facilitated exchange? So our timeline for sort of falling back around plan management is very different than the timeline for falling back around eligibility, for example, or opting into, I guess is probably a better set of verbs. Opting into partnership, opting into the federally facilitated exchange around eligibility can happen much later in 2013 because much of the building takes place at the federal level, and it's a, you know, a four-month, six-month process to hook up a state's systems around eligibility. Right. So while we haven't finalized what all those sort of entry points that you mentioned are precisely, that's the model that we're using mentally as we think about working with states who maybe are conditionally approved to be state-based exchanges but might hit lumps and bumps along the way. Again, that said, we're happy to begin a conversation with a state right now that says, listen, I'm a state partnership in 2014. Let's start talking about how to make that work. We think it'll go both ways, and we're happy to sort of engage a state under either scenario.
Anything else, Paul? Go ahead.
Okay. I guess the one other general question is, you know, I think where at least my heartburn is more than any other place, it is around technology and infrastructure and the timeline we have. Were we to, at whatever entry point, go with a federal partnership in a transition, does that limit, forget about the technology, you know, and the bells and whistles we might want, obviously that would limit that, but does it limit anything else about plan options or alternatives or the other kinds of things that would normally be a state-based decision?
So I believe the answer is no, and I think that's something we would want to explore with you in more detail over the coming weeks as this guidance is released and around some of the specifics of what you would want to be. The aspiration is for a plan management partnership to truly cede as much of that end-to-end control over the plan management process back to the state itself. There needs to be some oversight on our side because ultimately it's the secretary's responsibility to make sure it's all in compliance with the regulation. But truly the aspiration is, and frankly it's operationally easier for us to have a state fully own the majority of the plan management process. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Yeah, just follow up to
You can see we have technology problems just with the mic, never mind Kelly. I'm back to I think I heard you say, Amanda, you need 6 months lead time from states to make sure that the necessary state, federal, IT, and system connect. Yeah. So in other words, can you rephrase that in a way that says, if you see that you're not going to make the timeline or deadline,
yes,
we must hear from you, State of California, no later than
yes.
When on that? I mean, is that the 6 month answer or what?
So let's not put the 6 months in the ground because my IT people might smack me over the back of the head on that one. But let me frame to you how the process will work instead in a way that maybe will make more sense. So if California decided to pursue a state-based exchange. And applied at the end of this year, as is required under statute, to the secretary to be approved as a state-based exchange. We would look at your application, which would include when we expect to bring these exchange functions online, and have a conversation with you at that time. And maybe it would say, listen, you can't submit all your testing data to prove it all works yet, but we're happy to conditionally approve you because it looks like you have a viable path to operations in 2013-2014. And then we would sit with you and sort of create a set of milestones, the sort of conditions effectively of your approval, where you would say, we believe we're going to be able to bring our eligibility system, this particular piece of functionality is going to be online in March, and we're going to start the testing with the data services hub in June. And then we would jointly monitor that. And there will be a date, and it won't be the same for every state because of, the complexity of what needs to be stood up. But there will be a date that we all sort of agree is the point at which we'll make a go-no-go decision together. But assuming you've met all your milestones, and the milestones sort of logically grow towards operations in 2013-2014, then you'd continue on the path. And if something came up, as we all know happens when you're dealing with projects this big, and in March you weren't ready to connect to the hub for a particular type of testing or something like that, that's when we would start to have a conversation about, like, listen, there are a couple milestones that you've had trouble meeting. It looks like the timeline's slipping. Should you maybe transfer into a partnership, a plan management partnership, and the federally facilitated exchange would perform your eligibility functions for you? Does that make sense? So there will be a date certain. I just am not going to put that date certain in the calendar at this point.
But there's a certain time on that timeline in a year,
yes.
Where if we send you an OMG
yes.
text,
yes.
your answer will be LOL, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yes.
And so we could have a sense of
yes.
when that is?
Yes. So I think together we will have that moment at the end of this year because that approval process will be a reckoning of we believe it's viable. If the pathway is viable. If the pathway is viable at the end of this year, right, we can tell a story that, like, doesn't turn everyone's face red and get us laughed out of the room, right, that you're going to be able to get there. Then that's when we'll start monitoring these milestones together, and there will be a date sometime in late spring, early summer, where we will sort of mutually agree together, yes, it's going to happen, or, okay, no. We can't give it any more runway. We've got to fall back.
But September's not the month.
September of this year?
No.
Yeah, no, definitely not right. September.
2013.
Yeah. Right. Definitely not.
Okay, Kim.
Thank you. Thank you for coming, Amanda, and all the good work with you and your team and our state colleagues. I want to take the conversation a little different direction around implementation of what this model would look like in practice. Because we have, on the one hand, what seems to be very clear direction in the context of the statute, as well as implementing guidance in terms of requirements with the exchange and state Medicaids to assure consumers have a really simplified, seamless, simple eligible in enrollment process, regardless of what door through which they come. So the idea we know is we want consumers to be enrolled without delay in whatever program the process yields they're eligible for. At the same time, the federal partnership model, if I understand it correctly, contemplates an approach where the federally facilitated exchange would do the screening for everyone who comes through the door, if you will. And those individuals who are preliminarily screened or assessed to be Medicaid MAGI eligible could be referred to a state for the final eligibility determination by the state and, in our case, state and county Medicaid agencies. So my question, I have two questions. Number one, so how do you see the ACA requirements around seamlessness working in this context? You know, how would the data flow from the federally facilitated exchange to the state?
Yes.
And then potentially back? And then secondly, how do we see changes in circumstances working, again, with an eye towards what process would people use? Where would they go? So seamlessness as well as changes in circumstances, how does it work in the context of a federal partnership?
Yep. I will say just a few words about this based on what's in the regulation, because my colleagues at CMCS are working pretty actively and are really going to be the ones that will work with your state Medicaid agencies to define the sort of appropriate dynamic with the federally facilitated exchange. But as you said, the regulation envisions one of two models with the federally facilitated exchange and its dynamic with state Medicaid agencies, an assessment model or a determination model. The federally facilitated exchange in a determination model would actually make the final determination of Medicaid eligibility and provide that eligibility to the individual. Under the assessment model, just like you say, the federally facilitated exchange would make an assessment and would pass that individual to the state Medicaid agency for a final determination. There were a number of sort of guardrails set up in the reg, as I'm sure you're aware, mm-hmm. to make sure that process is as streamlined as possible, because I think there was this concern about the consumer experience. And so that is why CMCS is going to be working with state Medicaid in states that choose to go with a federally facilitated exchange or partnership model to determine mm-hmm. if an assessment model or a determination model makes the most sense for 2014, and what needs to be done to make that process as streamlined as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be, I know that conversations are being had about how to make that work in various states and under different scenarios, and mm-hmm. I suspect they will be expanding that conversation over the next few months.
Mm-hmm. And then changes in circumstances?
That I'm going to defer to them on how they manage that
as well. Yeah, it's whether it be a state-based exchange or a federally facilitated exchange, these issues around seamlessness for the consumer and making sure they're connected in as simplified and seamless a way as possible, and that they're able to report changes in circumstances in as simple and seamless a way as possible, seems to be a really significant issue and a big challenge.
It is, and I do think it's one of the reasons that we would like to see as many states ultimately moving towards a state-based exchange as possible, because we do think that's going to be the best source of that. It's the best chance of delivering a highly seamless experience to the consumer. I think we will work very hard to make sure that the federally facilitated exchanges interactions with state Medicaid are streamlined and seamless and very productive, mm-hmm. but we believe fundamentally that having one eligibility system in a state and the Medicaid and the state exchange collaborating around the development of that technology system and that rules engine, as well as then the management of the consumers, is going to be a better consumer experience. Again, we'll do everything we can to make it work on the federally facilitated exchange, but it won't be as good as a state-based exchange. In that respect.
If I may just follow up question there. Can you, I think I know the answer to this question, Amanda, but on the assessment model, what is it from the standpoint of the consumer?
What have they gotten in the assessment model? So they've...
So I'm going to defer to guidance on that. I don't think the vision is of giving anything to the consumer at that point. It's truly having run the MAGI calculation to the point where you know that that consumer is Medicaid eligible or likely Medicaid eligible, but also ultimately recognizing the state's responsibility to determine that eligibility.
So the question that gets answered from the consumer standpoint is, what am I eligible for?
Yes, although, again, until it's a determination, and this is where I just don't want to go too far because I don't want to start getting this wrong, and it's definitely the purview of my Medicaid colleagues, but the determination is an effective legal determination of eligibility. An assessment isn't a determination. It isn't all the way there. It's got you most of the way home, but not there.
Though building upon Dr. Ross's question, the ACA also is very clear in both statute and guidance. I thought that a consumer cannot be asked to provide redundant information. They can't be asked through a screen and referral, whether it's a screen and referral to the Medicaid program or a screen and referral from the Medicaid program to the exchange. They can't be asked to provide redundant information or fill out a separate application.
That's exactly right. So that assessment of the consumer to that point, all that information would be transferred to the state for the final determination. But you're absolutely right. It's not a duplicative process at both levels. It's just a handoff so that file.
But they'd effectively be making a determination informed by the federal system's determination.
Yeah.
That seems redundant.
Are there any other questions from the board? Peter, Bob, did you? You look like you were pausing.
No.
Okay, all right. Do you want to say something before we open it for public comment?
Yeah, no, the only thing I'd add, and one I thank Amanda very much for, I think it was a very good, clear note, given even more is coming out soon.
The
thing that I would just remind people if they're interested in commenting on this, as we have looked at this, Amanda noted that there are three options for partnership. And two things that I'd note in terms of the direction from the last meeting from the board is the one we're looking at would be for California to do plan management, for California to do as much of the consumer assistance outreach and education as we possibly can. We think those are absolutely specifically local specific. We're doing very good work on those fronts. We have no question from our perspective of being ready on those. So that's one. The other issue that I'd note in terms of as we're looking at this is that this is, again, we are getting new information regularly from the federal government as they're sorting this out. But I do is I look forward to getting written regs or new bulletin. I'm not sure what the form is going to be. But it was very clear in our discussions with our colleagues in Washington, the questions we asked, the engagement around issues that I think some of the board members raised today, clearly we're helping folks at CSIO think through some of these issues around how to have a functional, good partnership.
Yeah, so. It's very true.
Well, Amanda, if you will hang out for us, because I think you can have a seat. But in fact, as I've watched people arrive here, it reminds me of, you know, being in church. If you get there late, you have to sit in the front. All the seats that are left here are in the front. So there are still seats for those who want to take them. Beth, start us off.
Madam Chair, I just want to let you know, I received, speaking of text, a text from Susan Kennedy. She's stuck behind a terrible crash on some bridge somewhere, and she'll be late.
Yeah, she told us that we announced it. Yeah, great. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Capel for Health Access California. And this is a very helpful presentation, but we do still have a few questions on the partnership option. And just an observation that I would make, the notion that two bureaucracies would communicate with each other rather than putting the burden on the consumer to be the courier between them, that the exchange would communicate with Medi-Cal rather than putting the burden on the consumer to be the courier between them is obviously a transformational vision that's a key part of health reform and something that we very much appreciate. Two key questions. First of all, Ms. Crowley spoke about the transitional nature of some of the partnership exchanges. A question that arises for us is whether California would be fully funded to continue developing its ICT system during the time of the transition. And then secondly, We continue to wonder why a call center and a website are not part of consumer assistance that the state would operate so we could have our golden poppies on our website. So those are, or whatever, very California-specific things we would have. Those are the questions we have in this context. Thank you.
Thanks, Beth. And I might suggest for process that, Amanda, if you could maybe make notes of the questions that come up, because there might be variations on themes, and then we'll ask you to come back and respond. Thanks.
Madam Chair and members, Elizabeth Landsberg with the Western Center on Law and Poverty. It's wonderful to have DC in the room to talk about the partnership. Western Center's first priority is for us to be ready for health reform by October 1st, 2013. It's hard to weigh in because we don't have a lot of information about what the staff's thinking is in terms of the CalHERS solicitation process and where you all think you are. But certainly, you know, we appreciate your candor in saying that doing a California exchange will allow the seamlessness for consumers that we think is envisioned by the Affordable Care Act. So we urge that if it's at all feasible to move forward in developing a CalHERS system, we share the concern expressed by Ms. Belcher about the seamlessness of the consumer experience. This is supposed to be no wrong door. The original federal vision on the IT system was a real-time determination in 15 to 20 minutes. There's no doubt but that that's not going to happen for someone who applies at a federal website who ends up being eligible for Medi-Cal or Healthy Families, whose information has to be shipped to California. The county will have to make the ultimate determination. I assume we'll have to go back through the federal verification hub. Maybe that information will be sent along with the application, but all of the pinging back and forth of information between IT systems does concern us. We also share the concern about the call center being run at the federal level. The materials, the website, the PowerPoint presentation that CMS and CSIO did in September clearly state that the state would operate the in-person assistance and the navigator management, but that HHS would operate the call center operations and website management. So again, we're looking at a federal exchange website, which would be used also. People don't know at the outset whether they're eligible for Medi-Cal or not, so they will be going to a federal website and a federal call center. We have concerns about language access and other issues related to that.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Perfect timing.
Hi, Betsy Imholtz from Consumers Union. It's great to hear from our federal partners directly and appreciate your being here to do that. We as well, of course, are concerned that the exchange get up and running as soon as it can and that it provide that first-class consumer experience and recognize that a partnership model is one way to perhaps get there and appreciate consideration of that. Overall, we keep thinking about what is it going to be like for the consumer from the consumer side, and how will the consumer learn about and develop a relationship with the exchange, and appreciate many of the board members' questions along those lines about what it will specifically look like to the consumer. So recognizing that this is all still developing, if you're able to talk a little bit about what would the consumer see? Would it be a federal website that they'd go to with federal, literally the icons, or would the exchange still be able to have its own sort of brand and logo and presence for the consumer? That would be very helpful. As well, we share the concern about the call center, and if you can talk a little bit about language capacity on the federally anticipated call center, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thanks, Betsy.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Autumn Ogden with California Coverage and Health Initiatives, and we appreciate you taking the time to hold these meetings. We recognize the extraordinary demands on the exchange at this time to make decisions, and we just want to say we believe that regardless of whether California moves forward with a federal-state partnership or continues down the road of an entirely California exchange, it should retain the priority of creating its own first-class consumer experience, access the maximum federal funding possible, create a centralized rules engine that ensures a highly effective single point of entry and seamless linkages to all coverage options, and that Californians must have access to information and assistance that instills confidence and produces timely, appropriate health coverage enrollments in real time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Stephanie Hodson with United Ways of California, and we're interested to learn more about how partnering with the federal government might be able to help as the state formulates its Navigator program. Like, for example, perhaps there are some additional funding opportunities that the feds could bring to the table in that situation. Additionally, we're one of 15 groups who signed on to a letter to the board on human services integration, and beyond, on behalf of those groups, I wanted to offer just a couple of comments from that letter. We appreciate the huge, huge effort that's underway to build an eligibility and enrollment system in a very short time frame. And while human services integration is only one piece of that process, we think it's a crucial part of improving Californians' health. And we would urge the state to include human services integration, whether this ends up being a state process or whether it ends up being a federal and state partnership. And we hope that whatever system is developed, it will, one, protect the existing connections between those programs, two, help to modernize those existing connections, and three, expand or create two-way connections so that individuals looking for health can seamlessly get connected to human services, and also vice versa. Those coming to the state looking for human services also get connected into the health programs for which they qualify. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Hi, thanks for having us here today. My name is Athena Chapman, and I'm with the California Association of Health Plans. We represent over 40 public and private health care service plans that collectively provide coverage to over 21 million Californians. Because the exchange is considering several options for how eligibility and enrollment into the exchange will work, CAP is here to advocate for a streamlined, accountable, efficient, and eligibility and enrollment process. CAP is concerned that any proposal to have the county welfare offices do the eligibility and enrollment for the exchange is not the most efficient and effective way to achieve the goals of the exchange. Given that with Medicaid expansion, more than 1 million new Medicaid beneficiaries will already be entering the system through the county eligibility offices, they will continue to be a necessary part of the eligibility and enrollment mechanism for that population. CAP is concerned that given their expanded role, the counties may not have the capacity to take on additional workload of the exchange. Additionally, the county eligibility offices are not familiar with the populations or products that will be part of the exchange. And given that enrollment is scheduled to begin in October 2013, we believe it's prudent for the exchange to have an entity that can be held accountable for meeting high customer service metrics, including strict application processing timeframes and training for staff on all details of the exchange. In summary, CAP would like the exchange to consider that sending eligibility enrollment out to any decentralized group may result in an unaccountable and inefficient system, and having an efficient and credible eligibility and enrollment system is crucial for the exchange to succeed. Therefore, any entity responsible for eligibility and enrollment into the exchange, be it agents, brokers, counties, the federal government, or other contracted entities, should be required to demonstrate that they can meet strict processing timeframes, call center response times, and other customer satisfaction measures. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Athena.
I'm Beth Abbott from Health Access. I, too, want to welcome you. I'm a former CMS employee, regional administrator in the Western States. I wanted to say one thing that I've said in other venues, and if you all know this really well, you can just say, we knew that. I used to run the 1-800 Medicare number in headquarters when it first started, and I ran Social Security's toll-free line in the Northern California region. The issue of languages and cultural sensitivity is absolutely extraordinary in California. And when SSA ran their call center, they were concerned about call volumes and be able to respond to that, and those are all very natural concerns. The issue that SSA did, which is a national organization, obviously, is they lined up backup contingency plans in Pennsylvania, which on paper looked really good. But what happened is when there were call overflows sent based on very marvelous technology between the two sites, California sites and other parts of the country, people in other states who were backup could not attain any fluency in the languages. There are 144 languages spoken in the Los Angeles County school system. This is, and CMS, I know because I was there, think they're being very, very clever if they have English and Spanish. And that is clever, but we're looking at a higher order of capacity there. So I urge you to consider whatever both the board when they make decisions and you all when you're talking about backing up California in terms of this. I think it is a very important point. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Hi, Sarah.
Morning. Sarah Nichols on behalf of SEIU California. I want to thank the board for bringing in this important speaker from Washington and listening to her answers. And candor on this is very useful. Our number one priority in this context is the success and health of the Affordable Care Act and its success in California and its viability in the state. And we know that that's the exchange's number one priority as well. And so whatever it's going to take for that to succeed is what we want. We have a number of questions about whether the federal partnership would be that way to make it succeed. A lot of those questions have been raised today. We're going to submit others' questions in a letter that will detail exactly what we would want to know in order to feel comfortable with that option. We think this has been a really useful airing of these views, and we thank everybody for their consideration.
Thank you, Sarah. And I would remind our colleagues that are on the phone that they also can ask questions. We have not had any in the queue, and we do check the queue from the phone throughout. So it looks as though everyone who wanted to ask questions has. Amanda, I would invite you to respond to anything that, if you would, please. Summarize, close, whatever you want to call it.
But, and I might even have a couple of answers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But it will be coming shortly.
No, today even. Today. Soon. In the next minute and 24 seconds.
Amanda, could I interrupt just one second? Yes. We did get one caller. Let me get that caller before you. So, operator, if you would please open the line.
We are in a new location, so if you're speaking, we can't hear you right now. So we're working on technical issues. As Bob notes, we have them with mics, et cetera. Is this
Hello, can you hear
yes.
me? Andrews, your line is open.
Thank you.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, would you identify yourself, please?
Thank you. This is Carrie Sanders with the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network. Thank you for recognizing me. Just quickly wanted to echo some of the comments that I had heard. We appreciate the goal of making sure that our California systems are ready to start enrolling people in 2013, and thus the need to consider a federal-state partnership. California's population is one of the most diverse in the country, with almost 60% comprised of communities of color and over 100 different languages spoken. In our brief that was released earlier this year, we found that of those eligible for subsidies, 67% will be people of color and 40% will speak English less than very well. Without multilingual enrollment efforts, language barriers may result in a difference of 110,000 fewer limited English proficient individuals enrolled. So really, our biggest concern is about the call center and the website. If they're federally run, we have questions, as others have raised, of how the federal government will be able to provide consumer assistance to California's diverse communities, specifically access to oral interpretation in any language as required by Title VI of the Office of Civil Rights and also codified in our state health benefit exchange legislation, as well as access to translated forms, notices, and invoice recognition, which are currently under development as part of our CalHEARS IT system. And we would just have questions about, the extent to which the federal government would be able to guarantee access to translated forms on its website. In California, the exchange has agreed to provide translations in California's Medi-Cal managed care threshold languages. So we'd like to, we'd like more information about what would happen to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie. No other calls now. We'll go to Amanda.
So thank you for your thoughts and your comments.
and your consistent active engagement up to this point. Again, it's made a real difference, I think, in the kind of exchange that California is choosing to build, and has, to Peter's point, really informed our thought process at the federal level as well. I would say our priority with the federally facilitated exchange, with the partnership models, and in supporting every state-based exchange is a first-class consumer experience. It's absolutely a goal. I think we all recognize, and as you pointed out, that the more operationally complex something becomes, the more handoffs there are, it does make it more difficult. That doesn't mean doesn't tarnish our commitment to a first-class consumer experience in the federally facilitated exchange and in partnership models. It just means we're going to have to work a little bit harder and more creatively to achieve those. On the call center and the website, as part of the sort of early vision of partnership, those were not included. However, I think and I expect there will be guidance in the future about what can be done to sort of tailor in some ways the visual experience of a website to the needs of a particular state. I know folks will be happy to have an ongoing conversation about that. There are some things that are operationally easy but have large consumer impact, right? And that's the needle we're looking to thread. For the Navigator programs, which someone brought up, I mean, as I'm sure you're all aware, the 1311 grant funding for exchanges under the statute cannot be used to fund the Navigator program. It can be used, though, to support states with technical assistance around the Navigator program, training around the Navigator program, and we stand committed to help states do that in a partnership model. The question about what happens if we move into a partnership model. Does the money go away the minute that occurs? The establishment grant money, per our lawyers, is available for states in a federally facilitated building components that they need to participate actively in a federally facilitated exchange in a partnership model or to build their state-based exchange. And it will also be there to support a state that perhaps transitions between one model and another from one year to the next. The last day that we can award the money under the statute is the end of 2014, and we have put in, and there have been some formal announcements about the additional funding opportunities that will be available, I think 11 additional ones beginning August 1st between now and the end of 2014 for states. And so that money will be there to support states at any point, you know, in their journey and from model to model as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Amanda. That closes our public portion of the meeting for this part of the day. We will adjourn into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 100500, Subdivision J. We expect to resume the public session at 3 o'clock, but you know, that's a little soft. We will be out as close to 3 as we can. And we can, if it looks like it may be a little late, we'll post on the website. So those of you that want to watch that. So thank you very much. We will see you in a few hours. Thank you again, Amanda.
And Court noted that giving us longer in closed session doesn't mean we don't go longer. So it was a fruitful discussion, but we'll get started in just one moment. Sorry again.
Just a second. Too much to do in too little time. The story for everyone here. Wait just a second. Okay. Almost. Should I start with that? Okay. Okay.
We don't have minutes here. We didn't get minutes.
Oh, okay. 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 Do you think I can open it and let you start? as they trickle in, or should I have them off here? We are coming back into open session. We did convene at 10 o'clock this morning. All the board members were present. They all were asked about conflicts. There were no conflicts to disclose. I will now, with a quorum present, reopen the public session and invite Peter Lee to give his report as executive director.
Great. Thank you, Diana. And again, my apologies for us running a little bit late. But as you know, we're moving forward quickly on many fronts. So in closed session, this is my reporting out on the contracting and other matters we addressed. First and foremost, we had a very good discussion that looked at the both contracting potentials and the implications raised by the potential state-federal partnership. And the board has noted that while it was really gratified to hear about the good planning and work being done federally, was also gratified to note that given the strong status of our planning in California and our readiness that we strongly supported as the full board proceeding on the state-based exchange path. And so California will be continuing the steady march we're on as a state-based exchange and do that with appreciation for the good partnership work done throughout California, but also our partnership with the federal government that has been such a good and strong partner to help California stand up a state-based exchange doing the whole range of functions from plan solicitation, marketing outreach, consumer assistance, as well as the eligibility enrollment functions. The board also in closed session received a status report on the negotiations for the CalHERS contract and directed staff to work in the next week to close out that contract. We're optimistic and confident that we will be able to do that, and the board had a detailed report on the current status of those negotiations, and we look forward to both hearing about that and being able to talk about the final status of that contract at the next board meeting, which is next week. The other thing we announced to the board was a contract that the exchange released as an intent to award for project management support services for verification and validation staff. And this last Friday, the exchange issued intent to award that contract to First Data, and that would be a contract that would support the project management and oversight of the CalHERS project. And again, that intent to award was issued last week. This was a contract that the board acted on actually in January to allow our procurement to proceed and had delegated to staff the ability to engage in that contract. And finally, the board had a discussion around service center contracting and noted that wanted to come back when we had time as a board to deal with this in a more robust way and would carry that over to the June 12th board meeting scheduled. We next week have an incredibly full agenda, as I mentioned earlier in the day, where we have issues of reviewing options, potentials around marketing, around outreach, around navigators, around the SHOP program. It will be a full day, and so the board wanted to carry to the 12th discussion of service center options. Finally, I just want to take a very brief moment that on personnel matters is we announced last week what we'd foreshadowed at the prior board meeting of two individuals joining the senior leadership at the exchange at the appointment by the board. First, Julie Baker is joining the exchange as the chief technology officer. Is Julie here? If she is, we'll make her stand up. She is not. She's doing work back at the office. I love that. She has a long history of working in technology, both in state context in the state of Colorado, here in California. She's worked with Accenture and has a long background of understanding some of the technology systems that run the state's Health and Human Service programs. And we also announced that we have
hired Mike McClure as the chief financial officer. Mike has a deep background in the private sector finance, in particular with health plan, broker, and other financial arrangements. I am not going to, in the balance of today's meeting, list the dozen or so additional new staff, which I'll do at next week's board meeting when you have time to see them and they can stand up and you can welcome them to the team. But we do have a number, about a dozen people, that have joined the team as we proceed to be a state-based exchange, opening our doors for serving people in 2013. So with that, I'd see if the board have any questions before we open it for comments or questions.
Questions or comments from the board about the executive director's report? Public comment on the executive director's report. And I will give just a moment for our tech people who are outside telling me whether or not there's anyone on the phone. I'm guessing that there may not be.
Well, maybe while people are coming on, it feels a little bit of a come down after the but I really want to appreciate this issue that our doing the board's due diligence and staff, but also the entire community of California, is of really doing a hard look at the issue of the state-federal partnership. What's the sort of look we need to do? It is the due diligence we should do to make sure we're going to be ready to serve Californians. And I really want to appreciate, we had a lot of engagement from groups across the state saying, how do we do this and make sure we do this right for all Californians? And so we're sort of doing a quick summary note, but it really is a summary that is based on the board's affirmation of the status that we have together in California to be ready to serve millions of Californians. So I really want to appreciate both the board's engagement, but also around the state. A lot of people weighed in and have helped get us to where we are to be ready to say we're moving ahead and doing the right thing for Californians.
Beth.
The hard work that the board and the staff have engaged in evaluating the options that are before us, and the continued commitment to being live in so that people can begin to enroll in October 2013 in the very steep challenge that we all feel to get there. And I think the effort on the part of many of us to be constructive in trying to get to that objective, and also to note that it gives us comfort that that our friends at the federal level at CSIO are trying to create additional options for us. So it's not as if the door closes tomorrow if we decide today to pursue a state exchange, which has always been our first preference. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Going once, going twice, the meeting's adjourned.